Hello, everybody. The long anticipated premiere episode of Wise Choices. That's not true, is it? I didn't even know I was going to be doing this show when I went to bed last night. And I got a great night's sleep. I woke up early because I had a big day ahead of me. I'm jumping on a plane again, 7 o'clock tomorrow morning. So I was going to drive up to Billings tonight, get a good night's sleep. Boom, head to Indianapolis, have a great time there. And I woke up to this tweet. It's like 6 o'clock in the morning, my time when I wake up. And here's Tony Khan responding to a very nice post that John Elba, my co-host on Strictly Business, put up, announcing the fact that we were going to stop producing Strictly Business because, quite frankly, my travel schedule is turned into a nightmare over the next 3 months. Dave Silva, our super producer, Dave, could you put that back up again? Because John said, it was a very, very nice announcement, but just letting everybody know. And of course, Tony Khan at 4 o'clock in the morning says, sunsetting this fraud of a business podcast before the next AEW media deal is a wise choice. Hence the name of this show, Wise Choices. And of course, I had to respond back, and I did. And that response, and I think I highlighted a giant arena that I reportedly had less than 4,000 people in it, 18,000 seat arena that could the AEW only managed to put like 35 or 3,600 people in it. And this guy's going to tell me about wise choices. The amount of money that Tony Khan, hey, I used to have the ATM thing, you know, and at first, I think it was Mick Foley that gave it to me. And at first it was kind of like, well, that pisses me off because, you know, it's not like I can walk in and just ask for money. I mean, I had to earn the ability to have access to as much working capital as I did to be able to go out and afford the Hulk Hogan's and the Randy Savage's and pay for Bill Goldberg eventually and all the other things that we did that were so successful. But I had to earn that right. It wasn't like I could just walk in and ask for the cash, but that's okay. I kind of got used to it and I kind of dug it. ATM America's got a little bit of a ring to it. And after a certain amount of time, I started to dig it. But yeah, I've been called worse. I mean, you're basically the money man. I don't mind that at all. And then Tony Khan comes along. And it took me years to grow into that gimmick of ATM America. It took me years to start feeling good about it. And now I'm wearing it like just a comfortable pair of jeans. And then Tony Khan comes along. And he's stroking multi-million dollar contracts to people nobody even knows. Well, not nobody, of course, if you're a fan of Dave Meltzer and you live in the dirt sheet universe and you live to rate matches with stars, then, of course, you've heard about some of these talents. And nothing against the talent, by the way. The talent is not the issue here. The issue is that Tony Khan couldn't book his way out of a bathroom. The guy's completely incompetent, has no clue how to produce a television, and is too stubborn, from what I hear, to work with anybody that does have experience. So what do you got? You've got a show called AEW. They're a show that goes all the way to Canada, which is historically one of the hottest wrestling markets in North America. The crowds are insane in Canada. They love their wrestling. And the A show, AEW Dynamite, goes all the way to Canada with some of the biggest names ever in AEW. Needle movers, change makers, people that are going to revolutionize the business. And what do? They maintain residency in the sub 1 million category for 55 freaking weeks. Like, I think this week, Super Dave, what did they do this week? Let's take a look at the ratings. Let's see what they did this week. Just a gross number to start out with. Oh, well, there's the average. What was their average? There's a quarter hour. By the way, before we jump in, let's go back. As long as we're in the quarter hour conversation, let's go back to the quarter hours and take a look at them. So we got Shibata versus Will Ospreay. Okay, now we're coming off of whatever the lead-in is. It does pretty well. I can't remember the name off the top of my head. Doesn't make a fuck right now. But they open up. They got 939,000 viewers. They drop over 100,000 viewers during the course of the match. 100,000 viewers, 10%. That ain't good. That ain't good at all. And then it drops another 100,000 viewers, approximately. When they bring in the Young Bucks, all those guys, they are so good. The booking for the Young Bucks has been outstanding. The setup, the announcement of Will Ospreay, the platform, the pedestal that Will Ospreay was put upon, and deservedly so, because a man is freaking phenomenal inside of the ring. Nothing against Will Ospreay. But AEW, in typical fashion, didn't know how to build him, didn't know how to create anticipation. There was no story about Ospreay coming to AEW. There was no anticipation. AEW and Tony Khan, the booking genius, the guy who fantasized at 14 years old about booking a show called AEW. Well, guess what? Or Dynamite, guess what? He's doing it. And I don't think he's aged a day. His booking ability certainly hasn't. He books like a 14-year-old kid. But going back to Mr. Ospreay, who got absolutely no help, none from Tony Khan. Didn't make him feel special. Didn't build any anticipation. Absolutely nothing. Is it a surprise? Well, they would open up with 939,000 viewers and drop 100,000 viewers with Mr. Ospreay in the ring. And again, not Will Ospreay's fault. Unbelievable. What was their total number, Super Dave? Take a look at the overall ratings and see what we got here. 3,600 people in an 18,000 seat arena. Let's talk about wise choices, Tony Khan. And which, by the way, I wasn't going to debut this show. In fact, I wasn't even really sure I wanted to do another show, because the reason for not doing streaming, and there's multiple reasons, by the way, for deciding to rechannel my resources, right? Because I got so much going on personally as well as business-wise, and it became harder and harder to schedule. John Elba, very busy guy. He's got stuff going on. I've got stuff going on. We're trying to book guests. They've got stuff going on. And then I've got all my travel happening in the middle of all that. So it just got to be too much. And I said, you know what, Eric, you need to manage your resources. And in my case, my resources are really my time and my bandwidth, right? So I thought, you know what, we know we're going to put more energy and effort into building out the YouTube channel, because having two podcasts on one RSS feed, not to go too deep into the weeds, but folks, it was just a bit of a challenge. And Strictly Business was an extremely successful show. According to John Alba, it was consistently in the top five of all wrestling podcasts in terms of downloads. Whether it's top five, top 10, doesn't matter. But according to Alba, it was top five. You can hear from yourself on Strictly Business. You'll probably you'll have access to it tomorrow, because we didn't want to compete with each other, right? Otherwise, it'll be on right now. But the point is, John was just doing a nice thing, letting everybody know. And Tony decided to call me a fraud, John Alba a fraud, Strictly Business a fraud. So I made up my mind anyway. I'm going to pull the plug. And after reading that tweet this morning, I thought, you know what? I got an idea. Let's just come up with a new series on YouTube, because we're going to go there anyway. Something that I can do solo, which I've never done before. I am flying solo, at least on YouTube, for the very first time. It's kind of exciting. It reminds me of when I was a private pilot. When I decided to become a private pilot, you take your lessons. And then one day your instructor says, in my case, he said, Eric, you're ready to go up alone. Are you kidding me? I don't know if I want to do that. But I did, and it was exciting, just like this is exciting. And eventually, I became a very good pilot. I got my instrument rating. I got rated to fly complex, high-performance aircraft, believe it or not. And I bought a plane, and I had a blast. That's what this show is going to be. This is my first solo flight. So you can only imagine how good this show is going to get. We've got a couple of questions going on, so I just rant and rave and whatever for the next hour. Super Dave, what do we got? What's a good question? Spade Racing wants to know, would you have more respect for Tony if he was doing this with his own money or money he raised himself rather than his father's money? I don't think it makes any difference, to be honest. It doesn't make any difference. It's a lot. Look, here's the difference. Let's leave that question up so I can think about it a little bit more. Tony is using his own money, from what I understand. It's money his dad gave him. He gave him an early inheritance, which I think is pretty cool, by the way. I mean, if I had that kind of money, I would do that. I would want to enjoy watching my children enjoy the fruits of my labor. Nothing wrong with that at all. I think it's admirable. God bless Mr. Khan for having the success and the ability to do that. I aspire to be able to do that. Whether I ever will or not is another question. But no, I don't think the fact that Tony's using money that his father gave him is respect or disrespect. But I think it's, you know, it's something that you got to address, because Tony's not accountable to anybody. Tony doesn't have to perform. He's not subject to any financial pressures other than staying on the air and keeping a television partner. That's a lot of pressure, and that's real. So no, it's not about having respect for Tony or lack of respect for using his father's money. It's really more about, and probably the catalyst for a lot of my reaction and my desire to be outspoken, or my tendency to be outspoken when it comes to this stuff, is because Tony's kind of a hypocrite. Tony came out early on, and I was still supporting him, even though he was doing it. Didn't take it personally. Constantly talking about not making the mistakes that WCW did. How many former WWE talents are currently on the AEW roster? I don't know. Last I checked, there was a poster on X the other day. There was like 43 of them, right? But look, the disrespect I have for Tony brought upon himself. Not only was he coming out and comparing himself early on to WCW and how he wasn't going to make the same mistakes that WCW did. And boy, if Ted Turner knew this is the one. At first it made me hot. Now it's funny as fuck. Tony came out and said, man, if Ted Turner knew 1% of about booking and professional wrestling as I do, maybe WCW would still be around. You freaking clown. That was the straw that broke my camel's back. And it made me realize, you know what? Tony's no different than anybody else. He's just another clown. He's another wannabe. He's a money mark. And I don't think there's any better definition than a picture of Tony Khan. If you Google money mark, this picture in front of you would likely come up. But there's more. There's more. Look at the lovely. I get to hug my hero. There's two more. Oh, I got two more heroes that play in my sandbox with me. Thank you, Daddy. The difference between what Tony Khan and AEW is doing while they're writing multiple multi-million dollar shows. Oh, we're going to talk about Mercedes Moné and all the big impact that she had too. But before we do, yeah, I spent a lot of money. I earned that gimmick, you know, ATM America, I guess. The difference is when I brought people in and I paid them a lot of money. And your buddy, Tony, your buddy, your mentor, your Sherpa guidesman in professional wrestling, Dave Meltzer, right? Your soulmate just chopped me to pieces because I was spending so much money and stealing all this talent from WWE. Well, guess what, dipshit? It worked. I actually blew up in the ratings. My use of talent that I brought in and arguably overpaid for, it was effective. Tony, it moved the needle. And that's what this shit's all about, dude. That's what it's all about. As opposed to collecting a bunch of people, paying them more money in most cases than they've ever made in their life, even though their careers in WWE were over, they really had nowhere else to go. It was a good move on their part. Hell, if I was at the end of my career and coming up and saw the horizon coming and WWE was done with me and I could walk over to AEW and make millions and millions and millions of dollars. How much does Miro make? I don't know how much Miro makes. Reportedly he's in the seven figures. He's wrestled four freaking times. He's got to feel like he's in a witness protection program, for God's sake. All right. We got any more questions? Come on. Keep these. Oh, I am so fired up. This is going to be scary. Travis Fowler, do you think Tony actually listens to the constructive criticism or just hears word of mouth, reads? Oh, no, he reads this shit. No, he's in it. He's like Dixie Carter. Dixie Queen. And Dixie's she's a sweet lady, right? But one of the things, Bruce Pritchard and I used to go nuts when we worked together in TNA, because Dixie would sit in gorilla, because, you know, that's what executives do. They sit in gorilla, right? Because that way they look like they know what's going on, and they're kind of part of the process, sitting in control. Okay. In Dixie's case, it was all for show. But Dixie used to sit in Gorilla, and she wouldn't watch a monitor. She wouldn't look up. She was in her phone. She was watching what people were tweeting about the show. And her opinion of the show was based on not what she saw on a monitor sitting in the arena while it was happening. It was based on what was happening on Twitter. I'm not kidding you. Anybody that's ever worked there knows I'm telling you the truth. It happened. So no, I think he reads it. I think he lives too much in the dirt sheets, in the internet wrestling community universe. He's clearly booking for them. Just about every creative decision he makes, I think, is a result of his immersion in the internet wrestling culture, as opposed to being a television producer. Because it's quite clear Tony Khan couldn't hit his ass with both hands and a compass when it comes to producing television. It's undeniable. But speaking of undeniable, Dave Meltzer, okay, this is called a hook, by the way, designed to keep you until the end of this episode, which I don't know when this thing's going to end, to be honest with you. It's going to end when I quit having fun, or you quit having fun, and it'll probably be mutually agreeable at that point. But before that happens, I have an expert, a bona fide expert, because Dave Meltzer, the surrogate for AEW, and he's getting worse at it, by the way. Holy shit. Like, if you've been reading any of Meltzer's tweets, this guy's gone off the deep fucking end. It's crazy. But Dave Meltzer, according to Dave Meltzer's world, the reason that the interest in AEW is flat, really deteriorating based on their attendance at their television shows, as we saw last night, 3,500 people in an 18,000 seat arena in Quebec, of all places, hottest part of the North America for wrestling, Toronto, Montreal. It's unbelievable, except for Tony Khan and AEW. But the excuse that Dave Meltzer keeps putting out there to his Kool-Aid drinking inbred knuckleheads is that, well, it's because, you know, fewer people are watching television. So, you know, if you combine the loss of television ratings over the last, you know, year, and you add that in, and it gives all kinds of really cool fucking creative math, then AEW is actually doing really well. I don't think so, bro, because YouTube is on the cutting edge of data points when it comes to trends and what people are watching or not watching, or growth or lack thereof. Now, I don't like to try to pretend I know shit I don't know. That's not who I am. I let other people do that. But when I don't know something, I find someone who does. Tony, that's called delegation. You might want to think about it a little bit. Because if you're reading my tweets, if you're following what's going on with my podcast at 4 o'clock in the morning in Quebec, hopefully you'll listen to this. We're going to have an expert come on. It's going to talk about AEW's performance on YouTube, which is not a deteriorating data point or data platform. That's like right now. There's nothing more 2024 in terms of data than YouTube if you're in the entertainment business. And we're going to dig in deep. I mean, deep. We're going to talk a little bit about the difference between organic growth and, I don't know, non-organic growth. It's going to be fun. We're going to do that at the end of the show. But let's take a couple more questions. See where we got. Super Dave, what do we got? Ed Parham. Hey, Eric, do you believe the lack of a rights renewal by WBD in contrast to WWE? Netflix means AEW will have to find a new home. I've been talking about that. That's a great question. And thank you very much, Ed. I appreciate it very much. Thank you. It's a great question. And we've been talking about this now for months on Strictly Business as well as 83 Weeks. I've said multiple times that if I had to bet, I would bet AEW will get a renewal. What I wouldn't bet on is that it's going to get any of those massive rights fees that Dave Meltzer in his surrogate position was talking about AEW enjoy. I think they'll get another deal. Maybe they'll get a bit of an increase, but look, it's not going to be massive because AEW is not doing well from a television point of view, no matter how anybody wants to spin it. And you could look at any other indicator in AEW, and you got to be smoking something funny to try to paint a picture of any kind of growth. But Ed, thank you very much, man. Let's do another one. This is fun. I like these. I'm not used to this. This is fun. John Collins, are any of your books available in audio formats? Because I live with aspects of cerebral palsy and I have difficulty with dexterity. Ooh, I've tried. Now, Controversy Creates Cash is not available. I've actually attempted to do an audio recording of Grateful. And I hope to get one done at some point, but it's been a challenge for a lot of reasons. So I'm going to attempt to do it. And this, your post here, John, actually makes me more committed to giving it another try. So hang in there with my brother. Be patient with me, and hopefully I'll get it done sometime before the summer's over. Great question. Let's do one more. One more. Brian Medina, Minnesota is a city. So if your name is Medina, forgive me for calling you Medina, Medina, because there's a little town outside of Minneapolis called Medina. Used to be a great bar there. I've been there once or twice. Do you think if Tony Khan tells storyline and builds stars like you did in WCW instead of trying to copy Vince in the Attitude? I don't think he's trying to copy Vince in the Attitude Era. I just think he's throwing shit up against the wall, hoping something sticks. And maybe he's just throwing shit up against the wall because he gets off on it. He doesn't care if anybody else does. He doesn't pay attention to his quarter hours. If he does, he doesn't understand them because he's not doing anything about it. If he wants to build talent, and Dave Meltzer today in one of his social media surrogate posts, you know, there's so many stories in AEW that's part of the problem because they're throwing so much at you so fast, it's hard to absorb. Are you kidding me? That is the most absurd, bizarre attempt at covering AEW's ass that I've read in a long time, but it's Dave Meltzer, so it's probably going to get better before it gets worse. Brian, Medina, thank you, brother. I appreciate that. Oh, we're going to be talking about growth so much. We've got more. We've got all kinds of questions coming in. Damn, this is fun. We're going to be doing a lot of this, folks, because I'm kind of digging it. This flying solo thing is getting very comfortable very quickly. What do we got? Josh Henney, is the first quarter hour of Dynamite sharing some of the Big Bang Theory audience? Of course they do. People not switching back quick enough and getting counted. Yeah, I mean, that happens. That happens. And here's how a programming executive, or basically anybody that's ever produced anything other than a home video, their goal is to inherit whatever your lead-in is, whatever it is. Your goal, your responsibility in prime time, which is the most expensive beachfront property on television. Prime time television, if you're a cable outlet or a network, that is your most expensive real estate. And your goal, your mission, if you choose to accept it, is to maximize the return on the investment of that prime time real estate. So when you put something on at 8 o'clock, your goal is to increase that lead-in, as it's referred to. So when you inherit a good lead-in, the expectation, typically in the industry, is to grow that number and continue to grow it until the end of the show. Now, admittedly, that becomes more difficult with a two-hour show and nearly impossible on a three-hour show, just because of audience fatigue. It's human nature. But yes, typically, and that's why the beginning of the show, obviously, you have your 9 o'clock hour, your transition, crossover, call it whatever you want. 9 o'clock hour is also a very important hour in a two-hour show that starts at 8, because that, and I'm answering your question, Josh, it just may not sound like it, I'm giving you probably too much information, but yeah, you want to build upon your lead-in. That 9 o'clock hour is critical because at 9 o'clock, a lot of people that are watching television live, they're reaching for the remote and they're done watching whatever they were watching. And now they're going to flip around and try to find whatever else is on that they want to watch. So there's a lot of opportunity to grow your audience in that 9 o'clock hour, because at the top of every hour, you're going to have people, exactly as you said, not switching quick enough. Maybe they're going to be there for a little while. And if you're putting on something compelling, the hope is, and most often it works, you're going to be able to hold that audience and increase your audience at the 9 o'clock hour. But then if it drops immediately after the 9 o'clock hour, that's an indication that the people stuck around, hung out, saw it and said, yeah, I don't think so. Yeah, pass, and they'll move on. So I think that answered your question, Josh. You're a good man. I hope you're feeling better. Keep working that knee, brother. Working, brother. Don't get lazy. All right. What else do we want to talk about? What are we going to talk about today? The name of the show, Wise Choices, as a derivative from Tony Khan's post. That post that I responded to, by the way, had over 1.3 million views last time I checked, about noon or 1 o'clock. So evidently there's a little bit of interest in what we're doing here. All right, let's keep going with a couple more questions. I'm going to reach out to Anthony Evans here, get him ready to go because this is fun. We're having fun. More questions. Come on, Super Dave. What do we got? Craig Smith II. Hello, Craig. If Tony were to call you for some advice on how to produce a better product, would you give him advice or let him figure it out? No, I would. I've actually reached out to Tony probably 4 or 5 months ago. I don't even remember what the catalyst was, but Tony was just getting obliterated on social media. And at first I was kind of laughing at it, you know, and not laughing at it, but I was having fun with it. And it might've been the last time he and I got into a debate on social media. And he was just getting creamed. I was looking at, you know, I was looking at his posts and I was looking at the responses on his Twitter, and his own followers were crushing him. And I got to the point where I thought, you know what? This isn't cool. This has gotten to the point now where I started feeling, I went from laughing and having a good time with it because I don't take this shit too seriously every once in a while, but not too seriously. But it got to the point where I went, man, this is kind of tough. And I reached out to Tony and I said, hey man, if you want to tell me to go fuck myself, you absolutely should. And I wouldn't blame you if you did. But if you ever just want to talk through anything, you know, particularly how to handle some of this negative reaction that you're getting because some of the things you say on social media, I said, feel free, give me a shout. And I meant it. And of course, Tony responded. He said, oh, thank you. Here's what he said. He goes, I really miss seeing you at the shows. What? Okay. Whatever. All right. Craig Smith, the second. Thank you for the question, brother. And thank you for joining us here. Thank everybody for joining us here today, whether you've got a question or not, but we've got questions. So let's throw them out there. What do we got? Man, we're going to be doing so much more YouTube. It's not even funny, Super Dave. Not even funny.
Hey, Eric. We have a kind of repeat question from our last one, but Benny Takes On goes into a little more detail asking how or what suggestions would you give Tony?
Okay. What, and thank you, Benny. Thank you very much for the question. I'm going to take a breath and be as clear and honest about this as I can. First thing that you would do, and I know this is going to sound like I'm beating up on him like he's a 12-year-old kid, but in some ways he is when it comes to his ability to produce television. So I would have to almost draw the pictures like crayons and stick figures and shit like that to make sure that he could absorb it. And I'm not saying he's not a smart guy. Probably a lot smarter than I am in a lot of ways. Just not when it comes to producing television. Okay. So I would sit Tony down and I would say, Tony, let's talk about how to format a 2-hour television show. Let's talk about that. And Tony, the first step in formatting your show is to make a decision in advance as to what's the most important thing. What are you building toward? What's your main event for your next pay-per-view? What's your A story? And I'd have to teach Tony what an A story is and what a B story is and a C story and a D story. And how those A, B, C, D stories, how they relate to the television format. For a quick example, and I don't want to turn this into a TED talk about formatting, but I want to do a good job answering your question because you deserve it. So I would teach Tony the distinctions between A, B, C, and D and how they relate to a format. So for example, if I've got my A story, who's ever in it, I'm going to look at the total amount of television time, not the total runtime, the total amount of television runtime I have. Because that's what I get to work with. So let's just say we'll talk in terms of 1 hour shows. So if I've got, you know, 1 hour show, you've got about 43 minutes and change, 44 minutes it used to be, I don't know what it is now. Let's call it 43 minutes of actual program time. So I would sit down, I would say, okay, look, Tony, here's first. This is the first thing we do. Hey, Tony, pay attention. Quit looking at shiny objects. I know they're fun. I put down your Twitter. Come on, pay attention, Tony. An A story should get, I'm going to go off the top of my head. It's been a while since I've done it. I would say 25% of my total available television time, let's call it 30%, should be dedicated to advancing that story for my A story. Now, doesn't mean wrestling time, because narrative, backstage, in ring, someone sitting at home on a chair talking to the camera, there's a lot of ways to effectively, in a compelling way, position that A story so the story continues to advance and build towards its climax at a pay-per-view, right? My B story, I may only give 20% of that television time to. My C story, maybe 15% of that. My D story, maybe 10%, and so on. And I'd leave some left over for the introduction of new talent. Different, random things that aren't necessarily driven towards a pay-per-view. So what I'm saying is I would allocate a specific amount of time based on the significance of the story so that it was consistent throughout the show and I was using it effectively. And then I would teach them how to build. For example, Will Ospreay, I'm going to go back to that. This is a couple of weeks ago when they brought him out on television for the first time as he was officially a member of the roster. Absolutely nothing freaking happened between the moment the show opened and the moment Ospreay came out to build any anticipation. Not a promo, not a cool video package, not bumpers. What I mean by bumpers, 10, 15, 20 seconds right before you go to a commercial break. Let's hear from Will Ospreay as we anticipate his debut right here as a regular member of the AEW roster. Let's build some anticipation and thread that out throughout the show so that when Will Ospreay finally shows up, for God's sake, people care. And they stuck around. That didn't happen, did it? So that's what I would do. Is you have to teach someone that doesn't know anything before you go into how to craft a story and what a storyline really is, as opposed to what Dirt Sheet Dave Meltzer and the other shit stains that follow them think it is. A well-crafted, disciplined storyline has got plot points. It's got a build. There are certain criteria that have to exist in every story ever been told since the beginning of time, since cavemen were sitting in caves eating dinosaurs with cooking it over a fire. And when they're done cooking and their belly's full of eating dinosaur, they draw pictures of the hunt on the cave and they tell stories about it. All of those stories have certain elements in them that build that story. And when it's well-crafted and it's disciplined, it results in a beautiful thing. Cody Rhodes, Roman Reigns, Rock. Come on now. You knew I was going to go there. Bloodline. You knew when you asked the question I was going to go there, didn't you? Benny, you're a smart guy. But that's what I would do. I would start out with basically just teaching them how to format, how to distinguish A stories, B stories, C stories, why it's important. And then eventually, after weeks or months, if he figured that out, don't think he would, don't think he'd pay attention. But if he did, and he really began to understand, then I would sit down with him and I would recommend to him that he read a couple books. I don't know if he reads. I don't read a lot. I don't read for entertainment. I read for research and I read for information, but I would point him to a couple of different books that would really help him understand story structure. And then I think Tony would be able, and his team, because he's got a good team. He's got some good people around him, folks. Let's not pretend that's not the case. There's some really good people that work in AEW, smart people, talented people. Some of them I've worked with, Jen Pepperman, writer at WWE. Very, very talented young, I would say young lady, she would be offended by that. She's a very talented woman. Actually, she would probably laugh if I called her a young lady. Just an amazingly talented person that understands episodic television. She won a couple Grammys doing it. So I would encourage Tony to learn about how to structure a story and the critical elements that have to exist in a storyline, if indeed you want to call it a storyline, as opposed to an excuse for a match that you grew up wanting to see when you were 14. That's what I do, Benny. All right. They're just freaking piling up here. This is crazy. All right, let's do some more. I got all night. I'm going to be driving to Billy's to catch an airplane when this is over. This may not be over for a while, so who knows? I may not make my flight. That's how much fun I'm having. All right, Angelo. I'm not even going near that last name. Yes, I am. Angelo Andrzejewski. Andrzejewski. Andrzejewski rolls off the tongue. Just got to say it a couple times. All right, Angelo, if Trips called you to come back one last time, would you give it one last shot? Or do you believe the work culture is still there from Vince McMahon? You know, I know enough people inside of WWE that I do stay in touch with. And everybody that I've heard from has told me that it's an entirely different environment. So I love the business. There's no doubt about it. I love performing. I do. It's probably one of the reasons I'm doing this, because it's just fun for me. And if you can't tell I'm having fun, then there's no reason for you to be here. But yeah, I mean, look, I don't know that my lifestyle would, I would say my lifestyle, the point I'm at in my life, if I'm willing or even able to, you know, I certainly wouldn't be willing to move anywhere. I love where I live. I've worked my whole life to live in a place that millions of people from all over the world come to visit every summer. That's how beautiful it is here. And I love it here. So it's hard for me to leave. That's why I like doing this so much, because I can come out here and do these shows and I don't have to leave my property. It's freaking awesome. I'm out here in a treehouse, you know? It's awesome. It's actually a bunkhouse, but I call it a treehouse because it looks like I'm inside of a treehouse. But yeah, I'm always open-minded. Certainly would love to work with WWE if it ever made sense, but I kind of think that train has left the station, particularly given my circumstances and not being willing to move anywhere. So I'm not looking forward to that, and I don't anticipate it. But great question, and thank you very much, Angelo Andrzejewski. Are you proud of me, Angelo? Are you freaking proud of me? How many people butcher your name when they first see it? I mean, my last name is Bischoff. You can't imagine how badly that gets butchered. And yours is, Andrzejewski is a mouthful. All right, let's do some more. Come on, bring them on. Dara O'Brien. God, did I pronounce that right? That's a cool name. Italian? Dara, is that Italian? Just messing with you. I'm just fun. And do you think Ospreay, Banks, and Okada knew how bad they were about to be booked before they signed? I don't think they care. You know, I think it didn't matter to them. They got the bag. That matters. And it should matter. It'd be stupid if it didn't. But they got the bag. It was a big bag. It was full. That's probably, you know, number one. Number two, I think everybody would believe that they have the ability to, and they would have more freedom to perform and to create their characters. They would have more freedom in AEW than WWE, which is probably true. Very true, obviously. I don't think it really mattered. I think everybody's there for with the exception of Ospreay and probably Okada. They know they're on the last ride. If you look at any one of the 43 former WWE game changers that were coming over, none of them have moved the needle. And I don't think anybody went there with the idea in mind that Tony Khan was a great creative, was a great booker, great producer. They knew what they were getting into. Some of them didn't have any choice. Some of them couldn't say no to the bag. Doesn't matter. Good for them, brother. I would have done it. Somebody had been throwing that big old bag of money at me and said, come on over here. And yeah, I know our show is the shits and, you know, we've got a bad reputation creatively, but here's the bag. Hell, I'd do it. Who wouldn't? You're Miro. You're making seven figures. You only have to work four times a year. Call me, Tony. I'll text you my number. Great question, brother. Great question. Let's keep them going. Keep them going. Black Label, $9.99. That's a very, very generous offering. Thank you very much, Black. Has Tony done anything right by the AEW brand? Do you think he can fix it? How much would EZE charge for a one-year deal to come fix AEW? There's no number. But that's stupid. See, that I don't like when people say stupid shit. And I just said something stupid. Say, you know, there's no amount of money that would make me want to come to AEW for a year. That's bullshit. But it would have to be so much money, it would be insane. Because the frustration that I know I would feel, because I talk to enough people that are there every day, and I can hear and feel their frustration. I don't want to deal with that shit. I don't want to do it. And I don't want to be a part of anything that is going downhill. Because eventually, as it keeps going downhill, I don't want the blame for it. And you know for a fact, you just know, Black Label, you know, if I were to show up there getting that big bag of money, the minute things continued to go downhill, whose fault would that be? I went through that in TNA, by the way. And I have no desire to do it again at this stage of my life. Now, if the bag's big enough and there's only 12 months, I can put up with some shit for 12 months. Man, that bag would have to be stupid big. And here's the sad part. It wouldn't matter. And I'm being honest about this, or not trying to be a performer here. Until you're willing to let go and let people that know more than you do, or just have more talent than you do. Sometimes talent isn't a matter of intelligence. Sometimes talent isn't a matter of how hard you work. Sometimes talent is just what God gave you. You know, there's a reason. If you look at guitar players, there's a reason why Eddie Van Halen. There's a lot of people out there that work hard and are great guitarists. They're never going to be Eddie Van Halen. Never going to be Jimi Hendrix. You know, you're never going to be another Jimi Hendrix. That was a God-given talent. And Tony doesn't have that. He probably has a lot of other talents, but producing television and being involved in creative is not one of them. And that's okay. You don't have to be good at everything. But what's not okay is not recognizing you're not good at something and being too stubborn, or your ego being too big because you grew up fantasizing about booking a wrestling company. I shit you not. I read it. Tony's mouth. If you don't have the ability to recognize what's really going on around you and listen to people, you don't even have to like them. But if they're credible, give them a shot. Give them some rope to work with. Listen to them, because dude, what you're doing is not working. And I don't know how you can, other than your buddy Dave Meltzer telling you what a great job you're doing. I don't know how you do it. It's insane. But anyway, do I think he'd fix it? No, I don't think anybody's going to get him to fix anything. I think Tony's going to ride this pony till he runs out of money. And I don't know. Oh my God, that could be forever. This guy's got more money. I mean, money's not his issue. Talent is. Wow. Should we change gears here for a little bit? Super Dave, what else do we want to talk about? Leaning on Super Dave here. We got some more questions, but.
Oh, we got a lot of love coming in. Eric, a lot of people just want to say thank you. We got Benny Takes On here just wanting to thank you for all you've done in WCW and WWE for the business. And hoping people like Tony accountable.
Well, level. It's turned out, you know, I didn't want it to be this way, you know, and not to repeat this again, I beat this horse already half to death. But the day that Tony decided to come out and take a shot at Ted Turner, I said, okay. I'm going to treat this guy like every other mark I've ever met. He gets no special favor. If it's okay from Tony's perspective to come out and disrespect a guy like Ted Turner, who, by the way, created the freaking network you're on and had an amazing amount of success. He was a media mogul. He was a visionary that this world has not seen since. Rupert Murdoch's probably the only one that came close, but Ted Turner beat him to it. So when you're that disrespectful of people who you should be respectful to, Ted Turner being that individual in this context, at that point, you're just like everybody else to me, and you get nothing special. But thank you, Benny. I appreciate it, man. I thank you very much for being a part of this. This is going to be a lot of fun. All right, we're slowing down here a little bit. I don't like slow. I like fast. So we're going to speed this thing up. Let's go. Talked a little bit at the beginning of the show about YouTube and how Dave Meltzer and the shit stain universe, I mean, the internet wrestling universe, constantly are banging Donnie's drum for him, talking about, well, it's because fewer people are watching television because they read that in a headline somewhere. And they go, that's their go-to, right? It's true. Fewer people are watching television and they are getting their entertainment on other platforms, kind of like WWE does. I don't know how many Super Dave, do you even know? You don't have to answer this right this second, but before the end of this, if you knew, how many subscribers does a WWE have to their YouTube channel? We'll come back to that when we're done talking to our next guest. This man knows YouTube. He knows this shit. He's an expert in it. And because I know I'm not, and I don't try to be, I sought this man out. This man built UFC's YouTube channel, amongst others, and we're going to hear about it. We're going to establish his credibility, and then we're going to dig into the trends in terms of viewership on AEW. Ladies and gentlemen, without any further ado, let's welcome Anthony Evans. Ant, what's going on? Oh, we can't hear you, Ant. We can't hear you. He's a YouTube expert, but computers get in his way. Uh-oh. All right, we'll come back to Ant as soon as he figures this stuff out. This
is going to be fast. While Ant figures out his audio issues, we just want to welcome Antonio Santos. He's a new member to our
AEW membership. Yo, Antonio, we love you for that, brother.
Thank you for joining us, Antonio. And we have Luis just wanting to spread some love.
Freaking love. Not just love, Luis. Freaking love. I love it. Freaking love. I listen to this podcast all day, every day at work. Keep up the great work. I ain't going anywhere, brother. Ain't sunsetting this bitch. This bitch going to be in your face talking smack about wrestling for a long freaking time. Because I don't even have to go anywhere to do it. When it gets to that point, Mrs. B can wheel me out here in a chair. Me and my dog. She'll be rolling me out in a chair. It'll be a little tough in the wintertime with the snow, but that's okay. We'll fight through it. She'll be wheeling me out in the chair, getting me into my little studio here out in the bunkhouse, propping me up, bringing me some hot cocoa. And then she'll start me up. She'll pull there on, take action. Once we expose them here on wise choices. Tony, make a wise choice. Listen closely. Okay, let's do it. Super Dave, what do we got? Mick Mack, all the way from Australia. Mick, I'm about ready to start packing my chit and head over to Australia. I'm looking forward to it very much. Tony Khan's handlers should change his password. I don't blame you. I don't disagree with you. I don't disagree with you, and I wouldn't blame someone if they did. It would be good for them because Tony's not a good representation of the brand. First of all, he's no good on camera. Earlier today, I called him the Sam Bankman-Fried of wrestling, and I'm only really referring to is just the awkwardness in his appearance. I mean, they look like they were separated at birth, first of all, or they go to the same hair stylist because they both look stupid, in my opinion. But hey, it's subjective. But yeah, there's some people that should be in front of the camera, and there's some people that shouldn't. And Sam Bankman-Fried and Tony Khan should never be in front of the camera. Of course, Sam's probably not going to have to worry about that for a while. The next camera he sees is probably going to be when he gets processed. But in Tony's case, stay off camera. You should be that hidden voice behind the scenes. Like Charlie's Angels. Remember Charlie's Angels? That was awesome. Charlie was cool. Charlie never even had to go to makeup. Charlie was making money. He was, talk about making a bag. This dude was almost like Mero. Oh, he had to come to work more often, but he didn't have to get in front of the camera. He didn't have to go to wardrobe. He didn't have to show up on the set at 6 o'clock in the morning with a hangover and get his makeup on. No, none of that. Charlie just called in. All he had was his voice. That should be Tony. Tony should be the wrestling version of Charlie's Angels. That would be awesome. All right, let's figure out a couple more here because they're just stacking up. Anton Chigurh. Huh? Maybe? Is that close? Anton, if it's not, let's talk. So you can tell me how to say that name, because I don't like being able to correctly pronounce someone's name. I grew up with the name Bischoff. I was Bischoff. I was Jackoff. I was Biscoff. I don't like being any of that. Some people, when I was a kid in school, people said, I don't want to say it wrong. I'll just call him Eric Bishop. I said, it's not Bishop. It's Bischoff. So Anton, if I mispronounce your name, I apologize. And I mean that sincerely. Been a fan since 96 and I'm 32. Whoa, dude. Thank you. That's almost a lifetime, brother. We got almost a generation going on here. I love that. Thanks for the great memories. Thank you, man. I appreciate you saying that. I really do. And it's always fun. You know, I'm going to Indianapolis for a big meet and greet and convention. And one of the things I like about doing it is hearing from people and telling me their stories about how they grew up watching wrestling and how much it meant to them. You know, it really makes you realize that being a part of the industry when you are, yeah, it's a business and it's fun to a degree, to a point. And you're getting all that attention. You're traveling the world. You're making all that money. You're getting all that attention. People want your autographs. And that's all fun. It's overwhelming at first. But what you don't realize is that what you're out there doing is creating moments in people's lives that they're going to remember forever. And when you hear those stories about how people grew up in wrestling and how they bonded, you know, Amanda Webster, the lady I wrote about in my book, young lady that I wrote about in my book, grateful, really, she taught me a lot about being grateful for the opportunity that I have. And it's in the book. I'm not going to tell the story now, but yeah, man, it's awesome. Thank you for that. Appreciate it. Next time I won't butcher your name. I promise, Anton. What do we got, Super Dave? Oh, do we have Ant back?
Let's see if we got Ant. Do we have Ant?
His eyes say no. No.
Still working on it.
All right. We may have to do this again next time because we're just about running out of gas here. All right. How many more questions do we have? Because we don't want to lose those. And you know what? All it takes is one good question, and I kick this shit into gear. You know that, Super Dave. You've been working with me for a long time. So let's see what we got. Or maybe let me check my Twitter. Tony Khan may have tweeted out some ridiculous shit that'll fire me all up again. What do we got? Tyrone Dunston. Hello, Eric. How soon should AEW start their own Hall of Fame inductions? I don't know. I don't think there's should be a timeline on it. I think when it's appropriate. It would feel kind of weird to have a Hall of Fame induction for a company that's only 5 or 6 years old, but it doesn't mean they can't or shouldn't. It just would feel weird, but that's kind of an individual thing. I wouldn't hold it against him if he decided to do it tomorrow. He'd probably overbook it. He'd ruin it. He wouldn't know how to produce that either, but you know, whatever he wants to do. Thank you, Tyrone. I appreciate it, my brother. And what else we got? Luis Maldonado Jr. Hey, Eric. If you have to build a super team from any era, who would be your top five picks? Thank you, brother. Huge fan. Love you, Eric. Love you too, Luis. Oh, God, that's always hard. So I'm going to go right off the top. I'm going to my main man, Hulk Hogan. I don't care what anybody says. Hulk Hogan is still the man. Now, this is assuming everybody can still work and not injured and all that kind of stuff. But Ric Flair would definitely be on my list. Stone Cold Steve Austin for sure. Dolph Ziggler. I knew you didn't expect Dolph Ziggler, did you? Yeah, I like Dolph Ziggler. He'd certainly be up there. You know, how could you not have Rey Mysterio on your team? My God, there's so many great choices there that would really take, you know, I'd have to sit down over a six pack and a couple burgers to figure it out, but it'd be fun, right? It would be a lot of fun. Thank you very much, Luis. Love you too, brother. Thanks for being a part of this tonight. Our premiere episode of Wise Choices, aptly named by none other than Tony Khan himself, at 4 o'clock this morning, all the way from Quebec. Let's all a big round of applause for Tony Khan. Thank you, Tony. This is probably the only good idea Tony's ever really had, and he didn't even know he had it. Oh, I love that. It's too funny. All right, Antonio Santos, do you think WBD is looking at TK's behavior on social media? Would it affect their upcoming media rights deal? I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, they got to know. The guy's a little quirky, right? Got to know he's not a really good brand builder. I mean, that's certainly not something that should be in Tony Khan's resume. But does it matter to them? I don't know. World's a different place. In my day, if you had a high-profile producer that was kind of stepping in shit as often as Tony Khan does, I would have a conversation with him about it. We'd have a little chat because it's also a reflection on the network indirectly. It's a reflection on the network. And that's why I would have that chat. Thank you, Antonio. Appreciate you, brother. Love being here. All right. We're going to wrap this up. How many more questions do we have? We're gonna wrap this up in the next 5 minutes. We're gonna do a couple more questions, and then we're gonna do this again real freaking soon, like real soon, like maybe Monday night. Raw's going on. We can have Raw going on while we're watching Raw. We can do this show, talk about the wise choices that were made or not made on Monday Night Raw. Let's do that if everybody's available, because it's not just me. Even though I'm flying solo and doing a hell of a job, at least in my opinion, my dog Nikki thinks so. But I'm going to make sure everybody else has got the time and we can coordinate it. We'll do it Monday night while Raw's going on. We're going to do another wise choices. Jim. Okay, this is going to be a little challenging. I want to say orifice, orifice, Jim, orifici. Maybe it's Italian, orifici. Either way, Jim, thank you very much for the question, brother. As a data professional, I'm sorry, Jim, if I offended you by not knowing the correct way to say it. Could be tomato, tomato, don't know. I've been driven nuts by the competitor brand BS. Competitor brand. Competitor my ass. Jim, thank you so much. You just fired me the fuck up. Competitive. What are you competing for, Tony? Other than Booker of the Year. What are you competing for? And if you are competing for something, when are we going to see it? That's awesome. How would you define... Let's back it up. How would you define a competitor brand? Can you explain what AEW is competing for and how it's measured? That's exactly my point. And one of the reasons I wanted to talk to Anthony, the YouTube expert, is because we had a brief chat before the show. So since we're not going to hear from Anthony, but we'll back it up. We'll get Anthony on hopefully Monday if he's available to go into detail. We've got graphs and statistics and all kinds of stuff. So it's not just my opinion or his opinion, even though his opinion is valid. First of all, if I'm competing for someone, I'm competing for eyeballs. I'm competing for market share. It's no different, really, Jim, it's no different than any other business. If you're competing with another brand, you're competing for market share. It's that simple. It's nothing more complex than that. It's market share. What kind of market share does Tony Khan have? He can put 4,000 people in an 18,000 seat arena in one of the hottest markets in North America. So it's certainly not live gate, certainly not touring, because AEW doesn't tour. They can't. No one would show up. They don't show up for his TV shows. They're certainly not going to show up for live events that don't matter. When they don't have a chance to be on TV and wave to their moms, their boyfriends, their girlfriends, wives, husbands, side chicks, whatever. I'm not saying that happens. Never happens. How is it measured? I mean, you look at the data points, you look at YouTube, you look at Nielsen. Nielsen's the only thing we got. It's not perfect. It's a freaking mess, but it's the only thing we've got. And everybody's dealing with the same bad data. So you work with what you got, but you look at live gate, you look at attendance, you look at licensing and merchandising sales. You know, those are your barometers. YouTube, right? YouTube. So what Ant told me very briefly, and again, we're going to support this next Monday night if we can. But what Ann told me, quite honestly, is since last September, AEW on YouTube has dropped through the floor.